Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 3rd October 2021. It's a Sunday. We'll be continuing from this new book, the 3rd lesson of the 6th Patriarch Platform Sutta. We are at page 30, at the bottom of the book. Page 30, last paragraph. Then on another occasion, they said, awaken your senses, get a raisin, smell it, feel it, and anticipate eating it. When you smell without thought, it is very different. So that word's not very important. Smell without thought, see without thought. Without the image, when you sense the pure awareness, the pure perception, that is what you need, not the memory, not the thought process. Awaken your senses, get a raisin, smell it, feel it, and anticipate eating it. When you smell without thought, it's very different. Okay, then we move on. Our sister Susan replied to me saying that's what she did, and she tried to teach this to her children, which was very good, but they forgot the words. Smell without thought, feel, taste without thought, and just eat means chewing. So this chewing is very important. You chew to experience the taste consciousness without arising the thought or the concept or idea of what that thing is. You do it with clarity, silent and without thought. It's very different. But as you all do, the thought keep coming out. For as you do all this, you are thinking, thinking and thinking. There is no mindfulness at all. So the problem with sentient being is your mind process, your thought process, your mundane mind is very active, heedlessly thinking because it's so conditioned. The heedless thinking comes from your habitual tendency, the conditioning, your views, your opinion, your belief system, your reaction to mind processes, to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. Where you cling on to a lot of the duality created by thought, all this give rise to the dualities of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, then the duality of right and wrong, good and bad, wholesome and unwholesome. So when you do that, your thought is active. Then how can you be mindful? How can you be aware? Heedfulness is definitely out of question. To be heedful, we must be ever mindful without thought, constantly meditative. That's why it's not easy if you not train your mind. So I will read on, then maybe you can understand that. Reason why they say, taste the raisin slowly and deliberately chewing it. So it should not be the word deliberately chewing it. It should be just chew to experience the taste consciousness. Then the whole of that movement, the awareness of that, makes your mind very sensitive because you are silent without thought. That's what I have always told you all. When you want to see something or feel something, like when you are putting your hand on the photo, if you are not silent, you cannot feel because there are things going on in your head. But the moment you are silent, the whole of the sensation becomes very clear. That's why feeling becomes pure feeling. And everything that happens within that tactile consciousness, you understand the sensation and the vibration, etc. But when you think about it through a Dhamma or a word or a concept, you are not sensitive at all. You totally cannot feel because you are trying to think. You can only do one thing at a time. When you think, you cannot feel. That's why when you feel, you must feel without thought. Just be awake and silent your mind. Then your feeling will become very clear. We shall move on. Paying close attention to your senses might reveal insight into your relationship with eating and food. They are not able to explain this. They use the word might, meaning may be possible, but they didn't explain it to you. When you are more and more aware without thought, you can train your mind to be more quiet, more peaceful, with more clarity and more heedfulness. And that will allow you to insight into phenomena, into the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering, state, and non-self. These are also not taught, not explained by them. That's why they just use the words. Might reveal insight into your relationship with eating and food. How can you develop insight into your relationship with eating and food if you don't explain it, if they don't explain it to you? You are supposed to train your mind to be aware or to be silent so that it can insight into the universal characteristics of nature. If these are not taught, then all these are only words and they don't have any meaning. It only will have meaning to those who understand. Then the last part is the best. They say, aim to practice mindfulness every day. There is no such thing as practicing mindfulness. It should be aimed to be mindful most of the time throughout the day, not aim at practicing. The reason being, the moment you are silent without thought, you are already aware or mindful. Hence, you don't practice to be mindful because the practicing or doing is by the thought or the so-called meditator, which is also the thought. Then they continue, we are saying, if you do it for 6 months, over time, you might find that your mindfulness has become effortless. See how they contradict themselves. Effortless means you don't do anything and you don't put in effort to practice. Can you understand? You don't go and think. It becomes automatic. When you are silent without thought, you are already aware or mindful throughout the day by itself. That's why I used to advise you all, when doing the bowing, you just bow. Don't try to know. You do the continuous bowing until body and mind move as one without thought. Then when mindfulness is there, the form and mind will understand what that mindfulness or sati is. Just like swimming, go and swim and develop the understanding that the body is lighter than water. Hence, its natural tendency is buoyancy. Just completely allow your body to float without struggling. Then you will understand what buoyancy, flotation, and swimming is. You have to do it until it becomes a part of you. Don't try to know when you are doing it. That's the reason why the real training is very different from what is being taught. Then they continue to say, you might find that mindfulness become effortless. Think of it as a commitment to reconnect with and nurture yourself. This is the series of sharing from the Mayo Foundation Medical Education and Research Tribunal New Services. This is what I want to share with you all today before we start our class. So that part we just completed it. Huh? So do you have any questions so far? Have you all developed a better understanding of what sati is? After having gone through all this, it is about time most of you have a clearer understanding of what sati is and how you can develop the training to be more aware so that all this can be understood clearly, so that your cultivation can become very different. With this understanding, you can progress faster. My usual advice to you are, throughout the day, your cultivation should be as follows. Develop the daily mindfulness with understanding and stabilize it. Start your daily mindfulness cultivation, kaya nupasana, with your daily routine. I read again. Start your daily mindfulness cultivation, which is kaya nupasana, with your daily routine that you do very often while at home. Then extend it outward to your driving, going to office, shopping, and other activities of the day. After that, at your career environment, at the workplace, etc. Until this daily mindfulness has become a part of you, until you can be forever mindful during your entire daily life. All this constitute meditation, the cultivation of sati sampajana, mindfulness with clear comprehension of all action and all movement in the present moment, is real meditation. Before you can be heedful or mindful in the midst of life, the real meditation has not started yet. All of your formal meditation is of not much use if you do not have this ability to bring forth the daily mindfulness, the heedfulness in daily life, to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness and the Noble Eightfold Path in daily life. Any other question while I take a drink? Anybody has any other question? Where is the microphone? The mic is here. Anybody who wants to share something or ask any question, you can use this mic. Okay, never mind. If there is no question, we shall move on to the sixth Patriarch Platform Sutta. Before that, maybe we will read the verse for opening the sutra. Turn back a few pages. This one is the textbook. Verses for opening the sutta. This one is very good. We will chant this one. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of eons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I now vow to phantom it. Phantom the Tathagata's true meaning. You have to fold this page so that next time you can find it easily. Then we turn to page 9. So that one is verse for opening the Mahayana Sutra. The fifth patriarch before Master Huining. This part is quite interesting because before the sixth patriarch, the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth patriarch their lives were really not so fortunate as that of the six patria. They have to go through a lot of what they call very intense and tough condition. And through this understanding of the history behind, you will come to know how civilization at times, even when the real teaching, the Buddha Dhamma, is still around. Living beings are still deluded. They cannot see, they cannot appreciate it, and they cannot really hold on to it, or go all out to receive it, to cultivate it. And this is something that cultivation has to learn. Okay, we can start now. It wasn't easy being the sixth patriarch. Many people wished to kill him and his disciple as well. For this reason, after the great master obtained the Dhamma, he went into hiding, dwelt among hunters for 16 years. This referred to Master Huineng. Even after establishing his Dhamma platform at Nanhua Temple, followers of other religions still tried to kill him. And so the great master hid inside a big rock. He sat there in meditation. And although they set the mountain on fire, he was untouched by the flame. The rock could still be seen when I was at Nanhua Temple. This referred to Master Shen Hua's experience. Who wants to kill him? In general, it wasn't you and it wasn't me. On the other hand, if you consider the insane thing we have done in past life, it might well have been you, or it could have been me. But in this life, it wasn't you or me, so there is no need to worry about having broken precepts in this case. As I told you, the great master is counted as the sixth patriarch from the first patriarch Bodhidhamma, who was the 28th Indian patriarch. Bodhi means enlightenment and Dhamma means law. Should be Dhamma, meaning the truth. But Master Sun Hoa used the word law. Maybe he is referring to the nature's law that governs life and existence, which is also the truth. When Bodhi Dhamma set off for India, fulfilling Sakyamuni Buddha's prediction that the Mahayana teaching would be transmitted to China during the time of the 28th patriarch, the Buddha Dhamma already existed in India. In China. Yet it was as if it were not there at all. Although there were men who studied, there were few who lectured or recited the sutra, and repentance ceremonies were seldom practiced. Cultivation was superficial. Scholars debated and argued, but none of them truly understood the principle. This principle in the sutra must be cultivated. But at that time in China, they were not cultivated because everyone fears suffering. Now in America, it's just the same. People sit in meditation. However, as soon as their leg began to ache, they winced and flickered. And then gently unbend them. People are just people. And nobody likes to have aching legs. While still in India, the patriarch Bodhidharma sent two of his disciples, Fotu and Yeshi, to China to transmit the sudden enlightenment Dhammadhamma. But no one, not even Chinese bhikkhu, would speak to them. So they went to Lu Mountain, where they met the great master Yuan Kong, who lecture on mindfulness of the Buddha. Master Yuan asks, what Dhamma do you transmit that causes people to pay you so little respect? For Tu and Ye He, and Ye Qi could not speak Mandarin, so they use sign language instead. Raising their arm in the hand, they say, watch. The hand make a fist, and the fist make a hand. Is this not quick? Master Yuan replied, quick indeed. Bohi, enlightenment and affliction, they say, are just that quick. See, when you understand what the analogy of a fist and a hand is, you will awaken. So Bohi and affliction are just that quick. The moment you understand, no more suffering. As long as you don't understand, suffering will continue to grieve you. Do you understand? At that moment, Dhamma Master Yuan became enlightened. So I just opened my hand and closed my hand. Are you enlightened? So this one is just as an analogy here. So as I see, I just opened my hand and closed my hand. Are you enlightened? That was what my nature was awakened to early on. When one of my teachers just raised her hand like this, she was explaining to another Dhamma friend from Singapore. She said, you see, she then moved her hand like that, and then like that. She then asked, what do you see? The moment her hand moved like that and then like that, I awakened to the three universal characteristics straight away. No words, nothing. Because I was mindful, silent. That Singapore friend was not silent. He was trying to use the thought to understand. That's why he could not get it. And all these are possible. That very instant, she moved her hand. This nature just understood, no words. That's why the real Dhamma is not thought-based, nothing to do with the words. All these are possible. Similarly, the suttas say, at that moment, Dhamma Master Yuan became enlightened. Realizing that original Bohi and affliction are not different. For Bohi is affliction and affliction is Bohi. He made offering to Fortu and Yue Shi. And shortly thereafter, the two Indian bhikkhu died on the same day, in the same place. Their grave may still be seen at Lu Mountain. So I make a comment, I say, wow, just to transmit the Dhamma, they came all the way, and after they transmitted, they just passed away. Patriarch Bodhidharma saw that the roots of the Mahayana, the great vehicle Buddha Dharma, were right in China. Fearing neither the distance nor the hardship of travel, he took the Dhamma there. The Chinese call him barbarian because he talked in a way that no one understood. You know, Tamo Chu Si, Bodhidharma. He is very fierce. The painting that they paint of him with all the beards and the look, it was a very fierce look because he is very strict. When children look up at the beard Bodhidharma, they ran away in terror. Adults fear him, fear that he was a kidnapper, and so told their children to stay away from him. Petriya Bohidharma went to Nanjing, where he listened to Dharma Master Sheng Kuang explaining the sutta. When Sheng Kuang spoke, the heavens rained fragrant blossom and golden petal lotus rose from the earth for him to sit upon. However, only those with good roots who had opened the five eyes and the six spiritual penetration was able to see that. Now isn't this wonderful? Now you look at the note 8's explanation at the bottom. Note 8. Open through cultivation. The five eyes are the five supernatural ability. Yeah? First one is the Buddha eye. Second one is the Dhamma eye. Third one is the flesh eye. Fourth one is the heavenly eye. And the fifth one is the wisdom eye. After listening to the sutra, Bodhidharma asked, Dhamma Master, what are you doing? I'm explaining sutra, Sheng Kuang replied. Why are you explaining sutra? I'm teaching people to end birth and death. You have to listen to this. This one is very profound. So Bodhidharma replied, oh, said Bodhidharma, exactly. How do you do that? In this sutra, which you explain, the words are black and the paper is white. How does this teach people to end birth and death? Dharma Master Sheng Kuang had nothing to say. How did he teach people to end birth and death? He fumed in silence. He fumed in silence means he was not happy, but he kept his emotion inside. Then even though heavenly maidens rain down flower and earth gave forth golden lotus, yet Dharma Master Sheng Kuang can still get angry. This is what it means when it says that the Buddha Dharma existed in China, but it wasn't as if it was not there at all. This is because he still has anger. Where all these are psychic phenomena. When angry, Dharma Master Sheng Kuang used his heavy iron bits to level opposition. In response to Bodhidharma's question, he reddened with anger and rage, like a tidal wave smash a mountain. As he whipped out his bits, he snapped, "You are slandering the Dhamma," and cracked Bodhidharma across the mouth, knocking loose two teeth. Bodhidharma neither moved nor spoke. He hadn't expected such a vicious response. There is a legend about the tooth of holy men. You must not ask about the principle, however, because it is too inconceivable. The legend says that if a sage tooth fall to the ground, it won't rain for 3 years. Petriya Bodhidharma thought, if it doesn't rain for 3 years, people will suffer, will starve. I have come to China to save living beings, not to kill them. So Bodhidharma did not let his tooth fall to the ground. Instead, he swallowed them and disappeared down the road. Although he had been beaten and rebelled, Bodhidharma could not go to the government and file suit against Dharma Master Sheng Kuang. Those who had left home had to be patient. How much more so must a patriot forbear? Bodhidharma then met a parrot imprisoned in a wicked cage. This bird was much more intelligent than Dharma Master Sheng Kuang. Recognizing Bodhidharma as the first patriarch, the bird said, "Mine from the west." This poem is very nice. Then repeat, "Mine from the west. Teach me a way to escape from this cage." Well, see, the bird is very intelligent or very smart. 西方世界 means the land of ultimate bliss, no? Or Western paradise. It knew Bodhidharma was enlightened. It called him by such a nice name, the mind from the West. Mind from the West, teach me a way to escape from this cage. Although Bodhidharma had received no response from people, this parrot recognized him. Hearing the bird's plea for help, Bodhidharma whispered a secret expedient teaching to teach this bird how to end suffering. He said to escape from the cage, to escape from the cage, put out both legs, close both eyes. This is the way to escape from the cage. Do you understand? This is very beautiful. Put out both legs and close both eyes. The parrot listened attentively and said, "All right, I understood. Oh, I understand." And stuck out his legs, closed his eyes and waited. When the bird's owner came home from work, he always played with the parrot. But this time when he looked at the cage, into the cage, he was shocked. The owner thought the parrot was dead. That's why he was very wise and knew that the owner would open the cage. The owner was on the verge of tears. He couldn't have been more upset if his only son had died. He pulled open the cage door and scooped out the bird, which lay still and quiet on his hand. The body had not yet chilled. The owner looked for in disbelief at the little body. He peeped at it from left and right. It didn't even quill. Slowly he opened his hand. Must be the wing flap. The bird broke loose from his hand and flew away. Now, like the parrot, you are in a cage. How do you escape? You may say, "I'm already free. If I want to eat, I eat. If I want to drink, I drink. I do not have to follow rules. I can do anything." Don't think you are so clever. This is not freedom. It is just confusion. To be free, you must be free of birth and death. And then if you wish to fly into space, you can fly into space. And you wish to drop onto earth, you can drop into the earth. If you can do this, you are truly free or independent. Like the parrot, you are free. As I explained the sixth Vaitiyadhamma Jewel Platform Sutra, I do not lecture well. This is not polite talk, it's true. Some lecture well, yet do not dare to explain. After I have lectured, you of the true eloquence may follow. When you have opened your wisdom, you will understand. In his great anger, Dhamma Master Sun Quang knocked out two of Bodhidharma's teeth. He thought he had won a great victory because the barbarian put forth no opposition. But not long after, the ghost of impermanence, wearing a high hat, paid a call on Master Sun Quang. "Your life ends today," said the ghost. "King Yama, the king of death, has sent me to escort you." So this one in the Chinese tradition is Yan Lo Wang, king of death, Yan Bo Wang. Master Sun Quang said, "What? Must I die? Then I speak the Dhamma, flower fall from heaven, and the earth bubbles for golden lotus. Yet I still have not end birth and death. Tell me, is there a person in this world who had end birth and death?" "There is," came the reply. "Who?" asked Sun Quang. Tell me, and I will follow him to study the way. That's the black-faced bhikkhu whose teeth you just knock out. King Yama bows to him every day. Wow, this is really called lan already. Or what they call in Hokkien, jia lan liao. Silly. That's why don't end up this way. It's very miserable. Some more, he was told our King Yama bows to him every day. So do not perceive somebody by the outward appearance. You cannot have the nature to understand. Please, O ghost, speak to King Yama on my behalf. I want to follow that bhikkhu. I am determined to end birth and death. Can't you wait or allow me some more time? All right, said the ghost. Since you are sincere, King Yama will wait. Dharma Master Sun Quang was delighted. He was so quick to rush after Bodhidharma that he forgot to thank the ghost of impermanence. In fact, he even forgot to put on his shoe. He ran until he met the parrot whom Bodhidharma had freed, and suddenly he understood. Originally, it is just this way. I need only act dead. I need only be a living dead person. Bodhidharma walked on, ignoring the barefooted Dharma master following behind. Arriving at Bear Ears Mountain in Luoyang, the patriarch sat down to meditate, facing a wall. Dharma Master Sun Quang knew close by. For 9 years, Bodhidharma sat meditating and Dharma Master Sun Quang kneeled beside him, seeking the Dhamma. Early on when I spoke this public record, an 11-year-old child asked me, during the 9 years he kneeled, did he eat? I replied, how could anyone kneel for 9 years without eating and still live? When the patriarch meditated, Sun Quang kneeled. And when the patriarch ate, Sun Quang ate. But this is not recorded in the books. While the patriarch was sitting, many people came to bow to him and were received as his disciples. One day, a great snow fell and it rose in drifts as high as Sun Quang's waist. And yet he continued to kneel. Finally, Patriarch Bodhidharma asked him, why are you kneeling here in such deep snow? I want to end birth and death, replied Sun Quang. When I was lecturing Sutra Hour, I was unsuccessful. Please, Patriarch, transmit this Dhamma to me. What do you see falling from the sky? Asked Bodhidharma. Snow, said Sun Quang. What color is it? Asked Bodhidharma. It's white, of course. When red snow falls from the sky, said Bodhidharma, I will transmit the Dhamma to you. You knock out two of my teeth. And I have been most compassionate in not taking revenge. Do you really expect me to give you the Dhamma or transmit you the Dhamma? This was the test Bodhidharma gave to Master Sun Quang. Sun Quang later on became the second patriarch. Then he received the Dhamma name Hui Ke. How did Sun Quang complete the test? Cultivator of the way carry a knife to protect the substance of their precepts. A true cultivator would rather cut off his head than break a precept. Sun Quang drew his precept knife and with one slice cut off his arm and thus passed his test. His blood flowed into the new fallen snow. He scooped up a bucket full of crimson snow, dumped it before Bodhidharma and said, Patriarch, do you see the snow is red? Bodhidharma said, so it is, He had tested Sun Quang's sincerity and now the patriarch was extremely happy. My coming to China has not been in vain. I have met a person who dared to use his true mind to cultivate the way. Even forsaking his arm in search of the Dhamma. The patriarch then spoke the Dhamma Dao of using the mind to my seal. It points straight to the mind to see the nature and realize Buddhahood. This was the direct teaching pointing towards the true mind. He can bypass the mundane mind, the thinking mind. All this thought-based training are actually not required. But human beings cannot understand. They will foolishly think without thought. How can you live life? Without thought, how can I meditate? That's why they must have thought. That's why when I ask you to be silent, you reply, cannot, Ratio. If I'm just silent, I cannot learn anything. I don't know anything. You want to learn something? You want to learn Dhamma? And you go and use your thought. But the real Dhamma, according to the Buddha, is beyond thought, beyond mind. So you are chasing after your own shadow. And you will never find it. While hearing this Dhamma, Sun Quang didn't think about the pain in his hand. And before that, he had thought only of making the snow turn red. But doing so, he once again produced discursive thought. My arm really hurts, he said. My mind is in pain. Please, patriarch, quiet my mind. Actually, the real word should be heal my mind. Huh? Heal my mind. Then the Bodhidharma gave Sun Quang a hint. He said, find your mind, show it to me, and I will heal it for you. Dharma Master Sun Quang searched for his mind. He looked in the 10 directions, north, east, south, west, in the intermediate point, and up and down. He also looked at the same 7 locations or places that Venerable Ananda looked when Sakyamuni asked him the same question in the Surangama Sutta. That is, he looked inside his body, he looked outside his body. He looked for it hidden somewhere in his senses. He looked where there is light. He looked at place where conditions come together. He looked in the middle between the organ and the object. And finally, he looked in the place of non-attachment, which is no dwelling. At last, Sun Quang said to Bodhidharma, I can't find my mind, great master. It is nowhere to be found. This is how well I have healed your mind, said the patriarch. See, he just answered him this way. At this word, Sun Quang understood the meaning of the Dhamma transmission, the wonderful, infallible principle. 10,000 Dhamma return to one. Where does the one return? Sun Quang did not understand and ran after Bodhidharma. Before him, a bare ears mountain near 9 years seeking Dhamma to escape King Yama. With the transmission of Dhamma, Sun Quang received the spiritual name Hui Ke, which means able wisdom. Master Hui Ke asked Bodhidharma, in India, did you transmit the Dhamma to your disciple? Did you also give the rope and bow as certification? I transmit the Dhamma in India, replied Bodhidharma, but I do not use the rope and bow. Indian people are straightforward. When they attain the fruit, they know they must be certified. If no one certified them, they do not say, I have attained the way. I have given proof to Arahantship, I am a Bodhisattva. They do not speak like this. Chinese people, however, are different. Many Chinese have the great vehicle root nature. Do you know what great vehicle is? Akayamita answered, but the answer could not be heard. What is it? Louder? Louder? Yeah. But the meaning is deeper than that. You look at the notes. Note 11. Great vehicle root nature refers to the strong karmic affinity of those who in past life have cultivated the great vehicle and who by their meritorious action have sent down deep roots, that is, have established a firm foundation in the Buddha Dhamma, which enables them to successfully understand and practice it in the present. These are people who have great roots, which means they are cultivating the Bodhisattva way. They are not sainthood way cultivators. They really have the determination and understanding to go the Bodhisattva way. That's the reason why it has to be transmitted. But there are also many people who lie. Having cultivated without success, such people claim to have the way. Though they have not been certified to the fruit, they claim to be certified sages. Therefore, I transmit the rope and bowl to prove that you have received the transmission. Guard them well and take care. So that was how the tradition came about. But after the sixth patriarch, the fifth patriarch says, stop the transmission of the bow and the rope. Do not transmit anymore. So that's how the bow and the rope tradition stopped at the sixth patriarch. While the patriarch, Bodhidharma, was in China, he was poisoned 6 times. See? It's really not easy, right? Patriarch also can be poisoned, and they have to endure all this. Dharma Master Bohiruchi and Vinaya Master Kwang Tung were jealous of him. They prepared a vegetarian meal which contained an invariable fatal drug and offered it to the patriarch. Although he knew it was poison, he ate it. Then he vomited the food into a tray and it was transformed into a pile of writhing snakes. After this unsuccessful attempt, Bohiruchi tried again, opened an even more potent poison. Again, Bodhidharma ate the food. Then he sat atop a huge boulder and spat out the poison. The boulder cracked into a heap of dust. In 4 more attempts, jealous people tried without success to poison Bodhidharma. One day, the great master Bodhidharma said to Hui Ke, I came to China because I saw people here with great vehicle root nature. Now I have transmitted the Dhamma and am ready to complete the stillness. After his death, the patriarch's body was buried. There was nothing unusual about his funeral. In Northern Wei, 386 to 532 AD. However, an official called Song Yun met Bodhidharma on the road to Chunnan Mountain in Songling. When they met, Bodhidharma was carrying one shoe in his hand. He said to Song Yun, the king of your country died today. Return quickly. There is work to be done. The official asked, great master, where are you going and to whom did you transmit your Dhamma? The great master replied, back to India. And in China, after 40 years, to Hui Ke. Song Yun returned to his country and reported the incident. Recently in Songling, I met the patriarch Bodhidharma, who told me that the king of our country had died and instructed me to return to the capital. When I arrived, I found it exactly as he had said. How did he know? His countryman called, Bodhidharma is already dead. How could you have met him on the road? Then they rushed to the patriarch's grave and found it empty. with nothing inside but only one shoe. Where did Bodhidharma go? No one knows. Perhaps he came to America. Wherever he wanders, no one can recognize him because he can change and transform according to his convenience. When he came to China, he said he was 150 years old. And when he left, he was still 150 years old. No historical reference can be found. When Bodhidharma was about to enter Nirvana, he said, I came to China and transmitted my Dhamma to three people. One received my marrow, one my bone, and one the flesh. After the transmission, the patriarch himself no longer had a body. Great Master Hui Ke received the marrow. Zen Master Tao Yu received the bone. Bhikkhuni Song Qi could recite the Lotus Sutra from memory. After she died, the green lotus flower grew from her mouth. She received Bodhidharma's flesh. In the end, the patriarch had nobody at all. So don't look for him in America. You won't find him. This is Master Sun Hua's way of having humor in his sharing. The second patriarch Hui Ke of the Northern Qi is around 550 AD to 577 AD, whose family name was Qi, was formerly Sun Quang. When he was born, his parents saw Wei Tong Pusa, the golden armored spiritual being, means the Dhamma protector, came to offer protection. Thereupon, they named the son Sun Quang, which means spiritual light. Not only was the patriarch intelligent, but he had an excellent memory as well. And his skill and power of discrimination was so remarkable that he could read 10 lines at one go. When it took an ordinary people or person to read one. In a gathering of 100 people, all talking at once, he could clearly distinguish each conversation. The great master, however, had great temper or anger. He disagreed with everyone and was always ready to fight. When Sun Quang explained sutra, as I have told you, he used his iron bits to win his argument. Later, after he kneeled for 9 years in quest for the Dhamma, it was his anger which enabled him to cut off his arm and felt no pain. It was also because of his anger that he later felt pain. Afflicted by anger, he could have felt no pain. Pain is just an affliction, and affliction is the cause of pain. The second patriarch was 4 years old when he left Bodhidharma. Having obtained the Dhamma, he went into hiding because Bodhiruchi and Vinaya Master Guangdong, who had made 6 attempts on the life of Bodhidharma, also wished to kill his disciple. So although Hui Ke had great anger, he nevertheless obeyed his teacher and went into hiding for 40 years. When he was 80, he began to propagate the Bodhidharma teaching and transforming living beings. Later, the disciples of Bodhiruchi and Vinaya Master Guangdong tried to kill Master Hui Ke, who flushed insanity as he pretended to be insane to lessen the jealousy of his rival. But he never ceased to save living beings who were ready to receive his teaching because so many people continue to trust the second patriarch. Bodhiruchi's disciple was still jealous. They reported Hui Ke to the government, accused him of being a weird inhuman creature. They charged he confused people who follow him. He is not even human. The emperor then ordered the district magistrate to arrest him, and Hui Ke was locked up and questioned. Are you human or are you a freak? Asked the magistrate. I'm a freak, replied Master Hui, the magistrate knew that the patriarch said this to avoid jealousy, so he ordered him to tell the truth. Speak clearly, he demanded. What are you? The great master replied, I'm a freak. Governments can't allow strange freaks to roam the earth. And so Hui Ke was sentenced to death. Now isn't this the way of the world? The patriarch wept when he told his disciple, I must undergo this retribution. He was a courageous man, certainly not one to cry out of fear for death. He was sad because the Dhamma had not been widely understood during his time. The Buddha Dhamma will not flourish until the time of the fourth patriarch, he announced. And then he faced the executioner. Come and kill me, he said. The executioner raised his axe and swung it towards the master's neck. What do you think happened? You are probably thinking he was a patriarch with great spiritual power. Certainly the blade shattered and his head was not even scratched. No, the axe cut off his head and it didn't go back. However, instead of red blood, a murky white fluid liquid flowed onto the chopping block. You think now really there is just this is just too far-fetched or foul? If you believe it, that is fine. If you do not believe it, that is fine too. Just forget it. However, I will give you a simple explanation of why the blood did not flow from the patriarch's neck. For a sage entering the white yang realm, his blood become white because his body has transformed completely into yang, leaving no trace of yin. I don't believe it, you say. Of course you don't. If you did, you would be just like the second patriarch. Yang realm is Bai Yang Sijie. When the executioner saw that the master did not bleed, he exclaimed, hey, he really is a freak. I chopped off his head, but what came out was not blood, but this murky white liquid. And this face looked exactly as it did when he was alive. The emperor knew that he executed the saint because he remembered that the 24th Indian patriarch, Arya Sima, had also been beheaded and had not bled, but a white milky liquid had poured forth because he has been without outflow. When one has no ignorance, one may attain in a state without outflow and enter the white yang rhyme. You think, but you just said the patriarch Hui Ke had great anger. How could he have been without ignorance? You are certainly cleverer than I am, for I do not think of this question. But now that you have brought it out, I will answer it. He was not petty anger like yours and mine, which explode like firecrackers. Pop, pop, pop. His anger was wisdom, and because of it, his body became young. Great patience, great knowledge, great courage, and great wisdom. That's what his temple was made of. Realizing that Hui Ke was a bodhisattva in the flesh, the emperor felt great shame. A bodhisattva came to our country, he said, and instead of offering him protection, we kill him. Then the emperor had all the great officials take refuge. It is strange, bhikkhu. Thus, even though the second patriarch had already been executed, he still accepted this disciple. The third patriarch, Singh San, of the Sui dynasty, was of unknown family name and origin. When he first came to visit the second patriarch, his body was covered with repulsive sore, like those of a leper. Where are you from? asked the second patriarch. Where are you? What are you doing here? I had come to take refuge with the High Master and to study and cultivate the Buddha Dharma, answered Sun Song. You have a loathsome disease and your body is filthy. How can you study the Buddha Dharma? Master Hui Ke was clever, but the young Master Sing Song was even cleverer. I'm a sick man, and you are a High Master, he said. But in our true mind, where is the difference? This one is already somebody. He is not an ordinary guy. He is just like Hui Ning when he went to the fifth patriarch, remember? They call him a barbarian from the south. He said, physically there is such a thing such as a northerner and a southerner. But with regard to one's true nature, there is no north or south. That's why after that, the fifth patriarch said, he talked too much and sent him to the kitchen. Thereupon, the second patriarch transmitted the Dhamma to Sing Song, saying, this rope and bark or bowl has been transmitted or passed on from Bodhidharma. They certify that you have received the Dhamma seal. In order to protect it, you must go into hiding because Bohiruchi's follower or disciple will try to harm you. Be very careful and let no one know that you have received the transmission. The third patriarch, Sun Song, also felt or forged insanity while he taught living being. During the prosecution of Buddhism by the Emperor Wu of the Northern Chao Dynasty, during 561 to 577 AD, the patriarch fled into the mountain, and while he hid there, the tigers, the wolves, leopards, and other fierce animals all disappeared. After transmitting the Dhamma to the four patriarchs, Tao Xing, Master Sun Song invited 1,000 people to a great vegetarian feast. After they had eaten, he said, you think that to sit in full lotus is the best way to die? Watch, I will demonstrate my independence over birth and death. The master left the dining hall, followed by 1,000 bhikkhus. He halted by the trunk of a tree, and after pausing for a moment, he leapt up and grabbed a big branch. Then, while swinging from the tree by one hand, he entered Nirvana. No one knew his name or his birthplace. See, this is how they can also realize Parinibbana. Someone is afraid and think the first patriarch was poisoned, second patriarch was beheaded, the third patriarch died hanging from a tree. I certainly do not want to be a patriarch. It's much too dangerous. With this attitude, even if you want to be a patriarch, you could not. As long as you fear death, as long as you fear anything at all, you cannot even be a patriarch's disciple. Patriarchs are not afraid of suffering. They are not afraid of life. And they are not afraid of death, making no distinction between life and death. They roam among people, teaching and transmitting them, like Futo and Yeshi. They know that affliction is just bohi, and that birth and death is nirvana. So tell me now, who is not afraid of birth and death? If there is such a one, I will make him a patriarch. The fourth patriarch's name was Tao Xing. While very young, Master Tao Xing left the home under Master Sun Song. And for 60 years, he sat in the Dayan concentration without lying down to rest. Although he seldom opened his eyes, he wasn't asleep. He was working at cultivation. When he opened his eyes, everyone shook with terror. Why? No one knew. Such was the magnitude of his awesome virtue. Hearing the master's virtue in the 17th century of the Chen Guangrin of the Tang Dynasty, 643 AD. The emperor sent a messenger to invite him to the palace to receive offering. Unlike us common people who would attempt to wish ourselves into the court without being asked, the great master, the fourth patriarch, refused the invitation, saying, "I am too old and the journey will be tiring. Eating on the road would be too difficult. I cannot undergo such hardship." When the messenger delivered the patriarch's reply, the emperor said, "Go back and tell him that the emperor said that no matter how old he is and how difficult the journey, I have ordered him to come to the palace." The messenger returned to the patriarch and said, "Master, regardless of your health, you must come to the emperor's court. We will carry you back if necessary." At that time, since there were no aeroplane, no car, traveling was difficult. "No, I cannot go," replied the patriarch. "I am too old and ill. Take my head if you want, but my heart will not go." The messenger thought, "There is nothing to do but to go back without him. I cannot take his head to the emperor. The bhikkhu is very strange. He is hardly human." The messenger then turned back to the emperor. "Your excellence, you may have master's head, but his heart will not move." "Very well, go get his head," replied the emperor. He put a knife in a box and gave it to the messenger, say, "Slice off his head, but under no circumstances should you harm this bhikkhu." The messenger understood. He returned to the fourth patriarch. "Venerable sir, if you refuse to come, the emperor has ordered me to cut off your head," he said. Patriarch Tao Xing said, "If in this line my head get to see the emperor, that will be great glory. You may remove my head now." The messenger took off the knife and prepared to cut off his head. The great master closed his eye and waited calmly for about 10 minutes. Maybe it was 10 minutes, maybe it was 9 or 11 minutes. "Don't become attached. It is certainly not determined exactly how long he waited." But nothing happened. And finally, Master Tao Xing got angry, just like the second patriarch, and shouted, "Hey, why don't you slide off my head?" "The emperor had no intention of harming you," the messenger replied quickly. "He was just bluffing." The messenger heard this and laughed aloud. The patriarch heard this and laughed aloud. Then he said, "Now you know that there is still a person in the world who does not fear death." The family name of the fourth patriarch was Suma, and his personal name was Xing. Suma was an honorable ancestral name. Both the Emperor Suma and the Qin Dynasty and the historian and the writer Suma Qian of the Han Dynasty had this name. When the fourth patriarch became a bhikkhu, he took the new name Tao Xing. He lived 72 years, 6 of which were spent without lying down, even once to sleep. The fourth patriarch's rhyme of accomplishment was inconceivable. While Tao Xing was cultivating, a nearby city was besieged by bandits for more than 100 days, depriving its inhabitants of water and supply. Seeing the life of his people in danger, Master Tao Xing left his mountain retreat to rescue the city dwellers. He taught them all to recite the Mahapragna Paramita. After they had recited it for a time, the bandit fled and water reappeared in the well. This is the response based on the way which Master Tao Xing evolved as a result of his superior cultivation. When the fourth patriarch decided to build a temple, he looked with his Buddha eye and saw Broken Head Mountain surrounded by a purple cloud of energy. Observing this auspicious sign, the master went there to dwell, changing its inauspicious name Broken Head to Double Peak Mountain. The master used expedient Dhamma to teach living beings how to discard their bad habits. This stubborn living being, however, often discard what was good and continue doing evil. But his master persisted, and by doing all kinds of skillful means, caused this stubborn living being to realize their mistake. He propagated the Dhamma for more than 40 years, transforming living beings greater in number than seedlings of rice stalk, of hemp, shoots of bamboo, and blades of grass. One day, the fourth patriarch said to his disciple, Dhamma Master Yuan, you should build me a stupa. I'm going to leave. In the second year of Yuan Hui, of the Tang Dynasty, on the 24th day of the 9th lunar month, Patriarch Tao Xing, who had never been ill, sat down, and entered Nirvana. His disciple looked at his flesh body securely. Or locked his flesh body securely in the stone stupa. A year later, the iron lock fell away and the stupa opened by itself. Looking in, everybody saw the body of the fourth patriarch still sitting in full lotus, appearing the same as when he was alive. The master's body had not decayed, but the flesh has dried out. The fifth patriarch, Hong Ren, wrapped the body with lacquer cloth and gilded it. This true body still exists today. The fifth patriarch, Hong Ren, also lived during the Tang Dynasty. His family name was Chao. He lived in Huangmei County near Double Peak Mountain. When he was 7, he went to the temple on the mountain to attend upon the fourth patriarch. Great Master Hong Ren cleaned the lamps and cleansed the censer before the Buddha image. He swept the floor, carried water, split firewood, and worked on in the kitchen. At age 13, he took the 10 Novik precepts and studied under the fourth patriarch for over 30 years. The fifth patriarch was 8 feet tall and had an extraordinary appearance. When others treated him badly, he remained silent and unmoved because he did not give rise to discrimination. He never spoke of right and wrong. And when fellow bhikkhus bullied him, he never fought back. His calm, quick manner indicated that he had realized the state of peace. So you will stop here for meditation. I will off the light and you can have 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. Then I will send the alarm. So just relax body and mind, maintain awareness, stabilize your awareness nature, then use it to develop wisdom to meditate. Okay. Now we shall have our second session, meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you may have.
Brother, 我要 share 我最近哦。 有一天我在听Dharma Talk 的时候，所以我听到你在讲到这个 sentence 哦，就是Sakkayatiti is beyond thought. Thought is egoic when it is not enlightened 的时候哦。
对。
我的里面 suddenly like 会很像 动然后它会很像这样子 moving 一下。因为我觉得我 feel that 这个 sense 很像了，哇，很 profound。
Yeah,
然后我就赶快的
it does feel.
Yeah, 然后我就赶快的写下来。然后我又一次at that moment 我很像完全很像不明白，这个 sentence 这个 sentence。然后我又一次 repeating 的在听回这整个的你的那个 talk 在 explain about 这一个 sentence。
Yes,
not it. Now, 过后 after 我 finish 听了这个 talk, 我再看回这个 sentence, 我讲诶这个 sentence 很像 很 simple, but 为什么刚才我在听到的时候我很像完全的
Yeah.
哦，你没有来，你不明白，但是你会 feel 到它又很 profound。
对，
就是一个这样的那个 experience 啊。
Yeah, 你会经过，because you have the ability to develop that understanding already. The mind of an enlightened being and an unenlightened being are two worlds of a difference. The unenlightened being, before you become enlightened, is always egoic. That is the mundane mind. Because the atta, the ego, is still there. The sense of self.The me and the I, and the, what we call it, the sakayadity, self-delusion, is still very strong inside there. That's why there is no way for the puttijana, the unenlightened being, to have a free mind. That's why you cannot live by an enlightened being. You may try to be in that state, but it cannot happen because that oneis born of wisdom and understanding. And the five aggregate of form and mind, which is the mundane mind, will be grasping, egoic. It's not a free mind. So that five aggregate of form and mind cannot be that of an enlightened being, which is non-grasping. Non-grasping means,it is pure aggregate. So this pure aggregate is the one that transform them, make them different. Because of their wisdom, their understanding behind, their mind is different. That's why they are incapable of all those doing. They cannot do all those foolish things, the ignorant thing, the deluded thing. That's why the way they look at things is all different.Completely different from the holy people, from normal living being. That's why you tao liao yi duan de xiu xing, when you have reached certain aspect of cultivation which allow you to have this understanding, this word will have a very profound impact on you, which will happen. That's why you have this deep, like very deep sense ofreaction from inside that is so beautiful. Yeah. For normal human beings, they cannot understand. Yeah, it takes them really a long time to break through with this understanding. They may feel that like it's not easy to understand and it's very strange why you say that an enlightened being isThe mind is egoic. They cannot understand what that ego is, that personality, that delusion, that sakayadity, that hold on to the entity of a self, a atta within. And every movement of experience from that mundane mind is with that delusion. That's why the egoic mind is.Always there, the grasping mind is always there, and that mind can never be free because it's not a free mind. The one that has developed the awakening, it can be free because that five aggregate of form and mind is no longer egoic, no longer grasping. That's why it cannot be heedless anymore. It cannot behave the old way anymore.It tends towards wholesomeness, it tends towards the wisdom way, the Dhamma way, and it will not do all those foolish and deluded things that normal human beings do, because that is the way that awakening can transform that form and mind. That's why the form and mind that has undergone that awakening and transformation is different, it behaves differently.So for you to go through this is very good, Sadhu, to you. Okay, so?
So relative 我最近一直在听这些 Dharma talk 的时候，我觉得那些每次你的 advice 啊 like 就是说每一个的那个 advice 啊，就觉得哇，很 meaningful 啊。
Yeah, very deep. Although it sounds very simple, but it's very deep. So for cultivator who can pick it up, these are the pointer. These are the thing that you need to actually develop the awakening. Because a lot of people need causes and conditions to trigger off, to awaken. But if you have not done your homework, if you have not done your cultivation, if you have not diligently and through the faith develop it, you cannot reach that what we call that stage to receive and trigger off the awakening. That's why in Mahayana they say, Xianhua used to say this word, use this word, you have to diligently cultivate, xia gong fu, is it? Xia gong fu, to do all this. And then when you are ready, it will help you. When you listen to this again, especially for those who have gone through the cultivation, then they will pick it up. They will realize these are very important pointer. These are the things that enlightened being had realized. That's why they can share it to you. Then that is for you to check whether you have reached that stage or not, whether you have realized that awakening or not. Otherwise, your mind cannot have this understanding. It's just like Hui Ning. Your mind must have no dwelling. So the moment he heard this, he awakened because his mind is transformed. Then all the sutra, they will have this ability to show you what the enlightened mind is. That's why it's for enlightened being. I always say the sutra is meant for enlightened being. So if you are not enlightened yet, the sutra is not something that you can understand immediately or easily. So you need to put through the sadha, virya, the spiritual faculty, to actually diligently work towards the awakening. So sutra are just words of enlightened beings to guide the cultivator to realize the enlightenment. So sutra are like words, 文字, pointing towards the enlightenment, what nibbana is. But the 文字 is not that thing. The 文字 only describe how to realize that thing. So when you start to understand this, then you will read with understanding. You will not read to go and attach to the Dhamma and look for the Dhamma. Dhamma has to be realized, has to be awakened too. It's not a knowledge. You cannot learn it. You cannot want to have it. Yeah. The moment you have this desire and craving to have it, it can never be there. Because the realization of all this is a wisdom, which is an awakening, it's not a knowledge. So thought-based meditation will fail. All those cultivators who have gone through, they will know. But to even know that, to realize that, take a long time. Most people are trapped in thought-based meditation. The egoic mind is still very strong and they cannot see. The purification process is not easy. The Dhamma is not easy to penetrate. But the moment you understand and you realize it and awaken to it, then you find it very easy. That's why whether it's easy or not easy depends on your understanding. When you understand, it's very easy. When you don't understand, it can be pretty difficult, like impossible. Because the instrument that they use to approach it is completely wrong. So not until they have a good teacher who can advise them to cultivate correctly, it's not easy to penetrate the Buddha Dharma. So all this, you will go through. Therefore, most Kayamita who has already progressed, you all will experience all this and you will be able to go through all this. And what you reported is very good. So you can continue.
然后我时常最近听到某一些 sentence 哇，觉得很 meaningful 哇，赶快跟他写下来，
呀，
哦，来，
你一定要写下来，因为就好像以前 NB 写下那个 Unicode 一样样的。因为这种 dharma 你修了你就觉得 the meaning is very deep and is very useful。所以你写下来了你会去 reflect and contemplate, then 你会去慢慢去了解，then when the condition is there, 你就很靠近了，then suddenly it will trigger off, then 你就 like the aha moment, then after that, 哦，怪不得 Brother Teo 讲这样。Then you will come to know later on, all the awakened being, enlightened being, they will speak the same. Your truth is always the same. Truth is not your truth, not my truth. The reality, truth points towards the reality. The reality that explains the way things are is the truth. And the truth never differ. The truth is always the truth. It's only of one nature, one aspect. So all this will be the way Dhamma is. So all this understanding will surface, which is good. Subject to you, that's all.
Brother，我最近就听到你讲这句话哇，so simple but 很 powerful。你只是讲说，if you don't train your mind，you will think。哇，
对。
然后以前你每次听你又不觉得，但等对我听，我讲哇，怎么这个 sentence 这样
very
powerful？我又
profound,
把它
very
写下
profound.
来啊，我要放到 if you don't train your mind，you will think。
Will be heedless and you think like no. 因为这个 mundane mind 它就是这样的。The untrained mind, the Buddha say, is like a devil's workshop. It's in the Dhammapada verse. Who are the devil? With the evil roots, the devil are the evil roots, and they take over your mind. That's why you have to train. How do you train? You have to realize that there is a true mind. So for the true mind to arise, for you to realize it, the mundane mind must cease. So how can the mundane mind cease? That's how the cultivation surfaces. There are two ways to realize that. For the mundane mind, this is not to do anything. But the conventional Buddhist community or tradition, they cannot accept this. If I don't do anything, how can I cultivate? How can I awaken? Because they thought they have to do something. And who is doing? The thought is doing. So all these are very contradictory. So when it's very contradictory, they cannot understand. Then when I say mindfulness cannot be practiced, they even got more confused. They say everywhere people are teaching you how to cultivate or practice mindfulness. And when you tell them that, they cannot understand. So this is where the Dhamma is unique. If you don't have the understanding, you will contradict yourself and you will get yourself entangled and you cannot break free. That's why what you mentioned is true. You heard that word is so meaningful. If you don't train your mind, you will be heedless. So how do we train? We need the opposite five spiritual faculty to overcome the five mental hindrance. Where these mental hindrance are the mind state that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. And they arise because of delusion, sakkayadity, habitual tendency, wrong view, lack of yonisomanasikara, which is wisdom. That's why it's called mental hindrance. They hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. And the first two mental hindrances, sensual desire and ego, the duality, how our mundane mind still react to sense experience, the like and dislike, the pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. and our reaction to wholesome and unwholesome mind state, right and wrong, good and bad, all the dualities. Then after that, we have the third mental hindrance, which is sloth and torpor, the lethargic mind, the sleepy mind, the one that lack virya, because we don't understand the Dhamma. We don't have that drive to drive us to cultivate the Dhamma, where we don't see its importance, its usefulness. So all these are the lack of understanding. So that's why the mind becomes lethargic, sleepy. Sloth and torpor can arise. Then it is like tired, heedless, think a lot. It cannot focus. It cannot like stop thinking. It cannot be in a state of mindfulness, awareness. It cannot have that clarity of mind, the stillness of mind, the tranquility and the stillness. They can't. It's not easy for them because they don't know what this thing is. Then the next one is restlessness of mind, the fourth mental hindrance. The mind becomes restless, think a lot, have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. That's why a lot of people become what they call depressed. They enter depression, then they become like chronic, satyam long, the thought process. They have a lot of mental problem. Even nowadays, the younger generation, they have a lot of this. And restlessness of mind comes from your projection of thought. You project your thought into the future, or you recall the unhappy past, your phobia, your scars of memory, your insecurity, or you project into the future, which is not a reality, and increase your fear, your anxiety. That's why they have panic attack and all these things. So these are mind states that are not developed through training, through an understanding. These are mind states that has become habitual, like a cocoon of thought that keep on repeating itself without understanding, because these are mental hindrance, or we call wrong thought, that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and you cannot come out of it if you don't understand all this. So the Buddha's teaching is very simple. When you understand, you know how to train, you are free. Then the last mental hindrance is doubt. When you don't have an understanding, doubt will arise. When you don't have faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, and the beauty of this teaching, and how unique a being the Buddha is, how special a being the Buddha is, you cannot develop the faith. And without faith, you have doubt. When you have doubt, you have uncertainty. That's why you cannot do things well. Even as I'm saying, if you are not confident, you have not prepared yourself, you have doubt, they say you are almost destined to fail. But if you have faith, the English sentence also say half the battle is gone. Won. Half the battle is won when you have faith. That's why faith is very important. So the five mental hindrance create disaster, cause the mind to be heedless. That's why they are called mental hindrance. So you cultivate the opposite mind to system. The other way is to develop understanding. When you develop understanding, you can decondition the heedless thinking. The five mental hindrance, they can actually be deconditioned. You can stop the thinking. Through what? Through an understanding. Without thought, you're already aware. Without thought, the mental hindrance cannot arise. The mental hindrance arise because they are born of wrong thought. Wrong thought from your wrong view, from your attachment, clinging, grasping, your egoic mind, your delusion. So how not to arise then? Just let things be. Like just now, the Bodhidharma taught the bird how to free from that cage. He said, straighten your leg, close your eye, and pretend you are dead. Meditation is actually like that. Assume you are dead. Then see what the form and mind do. And from there, you observe, you develop mindfulness. Then you will develop the wisdom to free. Because When people think you are dead, means they got no more excitement in you, or they don't have any more negative intent towards you. That's why they will leave you alone. But if your mind is egoic and do a lot of funny things, you lure all this problem. So cultivation is the same. When you assume you are dead, which I came to realize also, that's why I say, when you really do awareness-based meditation, relax, maintain awareness, like your whole body dead, then the awareness inside there just aware, finish. And then find out, who are you? What are you? Without thought, who are you? Then with the awareness, observe how it conditions you to do things. How you become what you are, a human being. How the mental activity move you. How the views, opinion, and conditioning make you what you are. How the mental hindrance come to be. Then how you can train yourself. How when you silence everything, the silent mind, which is your true mind, can be realized. Then through all this, you cultivate. Then you only can develop the awakening and the realization to understand the profound statement that I make, which you came to realize it, which is really good. So all this are beautiful understanding. If you don't train your mind, it will be heedless. It will think a lot. So this one is a very good realization. Subtle to you.
Berarti 刚才你所 explain 的这个 explanation 就是只是这一个 sentence 就是 you will not train the, your mind, you will think. Like, 其实现在我发现到我在听这些 Dharma 的时候每一个的那个 wording 哦，我可以看到里面它有很 deep 的那种
cultivation。
我们要去去 cultivate， 要去 go through and then 去 realize。
对，
当我们 go through 的时候，这些 wording 它的 meaning 才会 stand out 这样子。
对，那就是修行嘛。因为你没有修行啊 ，you cannot see the truth，you cannot understand the truth，they are like。Words, 文字 doesn't make sense to you. But when you have the cultivation, you see, wow, this is beautiful. That's why the words that come out from the sutra and the cultivator, the people who has gone through the cultivation and awakening, they are different. That's why if you really hear a cultivator who has awakened, the Dhamma talk is full of beautiful Dhamma and truth.Whereas the other one, which is theoretical, knowledge-based, the talk can be appear like very flowery, very beautiful. But if you really have the cultivation, you listen, you will know. This one lack the authenticity and understanding behind. These are all mostly Dhamma knowledge. These are not words of awakening and enlightenment. So all this, you will be able to differentiate.Then you will know what the truth is, what Dhamma is. And this stage will also go on for a long period because this understanding keep on surfacing. Then you can receive truth very fast. Once you reach this phase, you can receive truth very fast and your cultivation becomes so different because your understanding allow you to move on to that level of cultivation, which is the more, what we call refined aspect of cultivation, the higher practices of cultivation. So all these are very beautiful. That's why what you go through is very beautiful. So, Sadhya Tejo.
Virtue Nakini,我在在听那个Dharma Talk， 就是拜次那个Indy 他有在 share 讲那个 Salika Sutra，
对呀、啊，那个很好啊。
你就有在怎样 emerge with 这个Eight Four Noble Path？
Then the seven stages of purification。
当我在听到你在explain 那个怎样用那个，因为你在explain 怎样去 cultivate 那个 button。
对对对。
当我在听到你讲那个怎样用那个 right effort 哦，在那个 second right effort， 怎样的 link to 那个the five way to overcome the unwholesome thoughts。
Yes, yes。
我整个人like 我对这整个的八正道的 understanding 哦 ，like
不一样的，不一样的，
很 deeper 的，
呀呀呀，
明白，每一个 step 里面，他的那种 cultivation， 他的那个 understanding，
对，
很 deep， 很 profound，
对对对，
对，他需要我们 life after life。以前我每次听那个八正道 ，like
对对对。
superficial 的八个 factor 罢了。
呀呀，对对对。But it's a very very wide topic. That's why life itself is the cultivation. Then 那个 Salika Sutta expanded on it. 那个四的 mind states that you have to avoid, that you have to abstain from, or you have to inclination of mind and other things. 那个是 expansion.From the Dhamma, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why what is right thought, the 44 mind states that the Buddha mentioned, they are all stages of right thought. Then right speech also there, right action also there. So all the 44 mind states are the expansion of the virtue cultivation and also the evil roots. So for cultivators who are at the beginning stage before they have the condition to penetrate the universal characteristic, they have to go through the cultivation following the Salika Sutta, means from the seven stages of purification of mind state. Sila Visuddhi, starting from morality, purification of moral values or sila. Then after that, citta visuddhi, content of consciousness, that's why mind's inclination, content of, means you actually incline your mind towards wholesomeness that has great benefit. You don't go and create wrong thought. You don't incline your mind on negative tendency. Then only you can straighten your view. Then only ditti visuddhi. The ditti visuddhi is very powerful. The ditti is to allow you to understand the right view, leading to the right practice. That's why after that is the path and non-path. Then they continue on until the seven stages of purification are all been developed.So that is the long way, the usual way that people take. But for cultivator, like most of us who have developed the understanding from our past cultivation, when we come, we don't have to go through this type of training. We can go into the meditative training to understanding, like Huineng's case, take us directly to the true mind, then we awaken. Once we awaken, only we come back to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path.Then we will understand what that Noble Eightfold Path is. Then you will know how to expand all this. That's why you look the way I realize all these things. I never go through that type of cultivation, but how come I can understand Salika Sutta? How come I know how that whole thing is been done? The seven factors of enlightenment are seven stages of purification, and the seven factors of enlightenment and the Noble Eightfold Path.How come my nature can have the understanding? How come this life I came, I start with Theravada tradition, I went for English education? It's because of my nature. It knows the causes and condition is such, my affinity and those that have affinity with me, the sector that I need to help.This life are mainly the Theravada tradition and the English educator, so that they can move on to understand the Mahayana teaching, because there has been that enough misunderstanding of Mahayana and Theravada tradition, the argument has become so intense in the early days. They even wrote book to argue, to actually challenge each other. It's crazy. In fact, the two teachings is the same. You understand, no different. The Buddha never teach Theravada or Mahayana. He only teach the Dhamma. And Dhamma is true. And the division came from human mind. Human mind created the division. Even within Theravada, there are so many divisions. They divide into method, techniques, and even teachers. So all these are human weaknesses. The unenlightened, deluded mind has this weakness or natural tendency to bring about all this division, split, and misunderstanding. So the world is the world. When we have the understanding, we will transcend the world. We will transcend reality. We will know how to break free, develop the understanding, and share it in a different way so that people understand. Basically, the division came from mind. So why do you hold on to division? The basic Dhamma are the same, whether it's Theravada or Mahayana. If you understand Theravada, you understand Mahayana. No different. But people thought Mahayana teaching is false because they thought a lot of those Heart Sutra, form is emptiness, emptiness form is crazy teaching. The Theravada don't have such thing. Who say the Theravada don't have such teaching? The Theravada used the word sunyata for emptiness. Then they also use anatta. Anatta is both empty nature and non-self. So anatta is a very beautiful teaching under Theravada. And you understand anatta, you will understand sacrality, non-self, and also empty nature of existence. That's why it's linked to sunyata too. So all these are very beautiful teachings and understanding. So once you start to develop the cultivation understanding, you will go through all this. That's why you will find the Sarika Sutta very interesting, and the way I explain it, even Ingbi herself at that day also developed the understanding much deeper, because the connection between the Sarika Sutta and the Noble Eightfold Path and the Seven Stages of Purification and the two way of cultivation, she didn't really have a clear link and understanding until I repeated the explanation, which you also pick it up. So sadhu to you, Rasong. Yeah, you can continue, Rasong.
Then go to a factor里面. 然后我就 expand to 其他的 每一个的 factor， 然后我就觉得哇，它的每一个 factor 里面有很多的那种 Dharma 的 understanding， 我们要去 go through， 要去 realize， and then 要去 cultivate 到我们去 awaken， 哇 then 用每一个的这个 factor 又 interlink 来 support，
yeah， all link together as one， that's why it's called a noble eightfold path， it's not eight path。Is one path, but they are all noble path factor. That's why noble means can make you noble ones. But they are all in one. That's why you cultivate, you must cultivate all these eight together. Like I say, the mahjong analogy, 九紫莲环, when you come together as one, then it become very, very complete, very powerful. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation. That's why under the Fourth Noble Truth, the Buddha make it very clear. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. It never say you cultivate Vipassana, it will lead to the end of all suffering. No. You cultivate Vipassana, it will lead to certain type of insight, awakening. But ultimately, you have to come back to Noble Eightfold Path. If you don't have the embodiment of Noble Eightfold Path, you cannot free from suffering. Your suffering is very deep. Life itself every possibility of my state, of my condition under various type of civilization, they are all very different. So how can you be free from all suffering unless you have the embodiment of Noble Eightfold Path? Your wisdom is not complete without Noble Eightfold Path. Means you must have a complete right understanding, the right view with regards to all things in life, in existence, the nature's law that governs life and existence. That's how it conditions right thought, right speech, right action, then right livelihood. Then how the four right effort keep on purifying itself. Then how you stabilize your samasati and samasamadhi to develop the awakening. So all these are interlinked, complete. That's why the whole teaching is so beautiful. That's why at the very beginning of my sharing, I already say whatever meditation you do, if it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So that one is very clear. Who can say that unless that being has the understanding? So all this, you start to realize and pick it up. That's why all these are beautiful teachings and sharing. That as you are able to reach this phase, it will give rise to a lot of understanding to all other Kayanamita and also give them faith, because all this can be done, can be realized, can happen if you cultivate sincerely. That's why I said the thing that you can awaken to and realize is a lot, especially this era, this sasana, where our conditions are very beautiful, the Kayamita force everything, and we can really progress and become very beautiful. Mm. So sadhana, Vessel, you continue, yeah.
那不是我那天听两个 talk 了过后，我才真正的了解。以前我们都听你时常有讲这个八正道的 cultivation 是很重要，但是我突然间来，我整个才明白，它真的是非常重要。如果我们 understand 它的每一个 factor 里面的那个 cultivation。 他的那个 cultivation 就是 virtue， 其实你每一次在每一个 talk 里面，你都一直有在讲的那些 essential dharma，
对，那些
dharma， 它是只是一个 part 一个 part 罢了。但是如果我们很 sincere 的去听去 cultivate 的话，对，诶，我那一天全部跟他 link 起来，yeah，they
are all interconnected，
对。 就我讲哇，真的，我那天我才真正的是来 from inside 的去 realize that 这个八正道真的是很重要，and
yeah,
then 真的是很 powerful， 它这个八正道是唯一的一条道路来free我们的
That's why under the four foundation of mindfulness, the Buddha mentioned ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu o bhikkhu。 Ekayano, this is the only way out of suffering, namely the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. And under the four foundations of mindfulness, the last foundation, which is Dhammanupassana, the last practice is mindfulness or the Four Noble Truth and its three turning. And under that one, the Noble Eightfold Path is the last one that is to be cultivated. That's why whatever cultivation you do, it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation, the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. That is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. That's why now you start to understand the beauty of the teaching. That's why the mind map that my daughter did is, the whole thing is linked actually, and the whole teaching can be linked. They are not separate, isolated teaching here and there. No. All the essential Dhamma spin off from the essential Dhamma, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, from the Four Noble Truths and its straightening, is spin off all the other teaching. That's why they are all interconnected, related. That's why his teaching is very unique and very powerful, and it can bring about awakening, realization. The mind can be liberated and free. And this is so unique, so beautiful. Salute to you, Rasong, for having this ability.
embodiment 这一个八圣道的时候 我们就是 very beautiful 了
很好
but 这个过程需要很多的这个、understanding 跟这个 cultivate
对 that's why the whole of the training is I use the word unending because Dhamma wisdom is unendingAlthough there is such thing as perfection of wisdom, yes, you can perfect your wisdom. But when it comes to real life training, the real life understanding is an unending process. Your life itself is an unending process. Life has a lot of variation, possibility, and civilization can evolve until very, very complicated, very complex, and very...Beautiful. So all these are the understanding that is available within existence. So the mind right creation, the mind right existence, that's why it's unending. So when we cultivate, the way the Bodhisattva way is being designed is to have this ability of those who go in this way to cultivate the limitlessWisdom and understanding and perfection of virtue. That's why it's a continuous process. That's why a certain type of bodhisattva, they choose to continuously come back to do this work because that is what life is all about. That is what existence is all about. Like what Kuan Yin Bodhisattva has realized.True emptiness is wonderful existence, 真空妙有 So all this, they will surface, they will become a beautiful understanding that cultivator will be able to make use of, to develop all this understanding and penetrative training. Wow, very beautiful. Today's sharing is very good. Anything else?
刚才我在听你在做 explain 的时候，哎，我可以了解你的 explanation 里面需要用到哪一个 factor， 就是八乘道八，它全部是 interlink 的。来，
对，
哦，你再看一下，哦，这个是哪一个的 factor 的 combination， 然后要emerge with 哪一个叫？哎，
对，
哎，我觉得在很像很神奇啊。superficial 这样子，我现在听到了这个 Dhamma， 你会 apply 说在这个 factor 里面要怎样的进去，然后他要跟做另外一个的 support 来这样子，
因为你的修行到那一段了嘛，但是你能够了解嘛 ，otherwise 人家不了解的 ，to them is your noble eightfold path only， I also know the right view they can rattle。It's just like knowledge, they can rattle. But the actual cultivation is so different, so profound. So much thing is involved with the Noble Eightfold Path. And it's linked to so many of the Buddha's sutta and teachings. And they are so elaborate, so beautiful. That's why it's all very beautiful when you have the Dhamma. Sadhu to you, so.
Virtue 其实你一直 advise 我们、每一个 Karmita 做这个 mindfulness 的这个、cultivation、只是 lying down silent 跟 lying down、就已经是一个中一个八正道了
对、Because without mindfulness you cannot be heedful even you are not heedful you cannot cultivate noble heedful path、cultivate 不到的因为 the right view itself unisom monasticara and the penetrativeAwakening need mindfulness to develop. Without mindfulness, sati sampajana and the initial wisdom cannot come about. That's why mindfulness is the only way. The four foundation of mindfulness. Ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu. O bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, you know, the Buddha said. Overcoming of sorrow and lamentation to realize the right path leading to the awakening and the enlightenment. So all these are very clearly stated in the sutta.
But really, even this mindfulness, the training, is very
difficult.
It's not easy. From the beginning, the start, and how to stabilize, and how to let the mind enter sati, how to
use
sati, and then to cultivate this four right, four mindfulness.
Right effort, four foundation of
mindfulness. It's already a very big topic.
That's why now, when you can understand, you reflect back to the early day, before you all have this understanding and teaching, what was taught in the Buddhist tradition or community? Totally no teaching at all. Thought-based meditation a lot. Note here, note there, method, technique, and all those things. How many real teachers talk about mindfulness training? The silent mind, like Hui Ning, the three hallmarks of Hui Ning. You cannot find, even my teaching, you go. Very difficult, they have the theory. But who can teach the mindfulness to realize that? Even the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta tell you that thing, the three hallmarks, but he never teach you how to meditate to realize that. Do you realize that?
对，对，对，对，对，对。
He just give you the Dhamma. Mind must have no dwelling. Then you must realize the state of no thought. What is no thought? How to realize that? How to silence? How to train? Then how to link to mindfulness? Well, he never teach all this. But those who awaken can understand that what he share is very beautiful. Well, Hui Ning was a unique being. He was born without the mundane mind. That's why he teach like J. Krishnamurti, different. Where through his realization, he share, he teach. And the word he use are very different. That's why he dare to tell sincere disciple, the Noble Eightfold Path that I teach is different from your teacher. Because whatever I teach, never deviate from the true nature. To teach Dhamma by not referring to the true nature, is to teach all Dhamma. Is to debate. Means you are teaching Dhamma with mark, not the teaching that are without mark. So all these are so clear, so beautiful. But what the worm is short of or missing is what I mentioned. The explanation of the cultivation is not there. That's why my mission, this line, based on the request of Maitreya, is to teach the true Dhamma. To allow cultivator to realize the true Dhamma, so that the Theravada understand that they, through realizing the Theravada teaching, can also penetrate the Mahayana teaching. No different, exactly the same. That's how my nature penetrates, through understanding Mahayana. Through understanding Theravada, then Mahayana becomes something automatic. So all this, unless you have these great beings who have the understanding, they cannot teach you. They cannot teach you. So now you start to understand how over the years we have developed so much understanding and the cultivation has evolved until a lot of people also cannot understand what this thing is. But the world will come to a realization. If I'm not wrong, in about 10 years' time, they will come to know this teaching. And this website will be very popular. And a lot of people will come and look for this style of teaching. You can continue.
So far, Barakit 应该是这样了。
OK. 可以，因为 6点。
对对，
六零六了，可以，so we all rejoice first, huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, today's sharing is very good. You all should go and listen to it. It is very profound. It can help a lot of cultivators. Mm. Yes.
But yeah, I just would like to inform all the Kayana Mitas that the new book is ready for collection.
Oh, sadhu, sadhu.
I will send to Ratio's place and Brother Suvian's place and then collect from my place also.
Miss Leo, yes. Yeah, Miss Leo. Yeah. Sadhu. That new book is very good. Maybe when we have it, we will go through it too. That book is very good.
Brother, 还有另外一件事情。
啊。
有时间吗 ？Maybe
有时间。
我要做一个 request， 那个 雷卡 Sutta actually 那天 Andy suggest 的时候我发现到真的是很 profound。
我记得你在之前有讲过一次，但是只是
go through relate it is related to that book seeing and knowing。
Correct。
Until we can see our own defilements, there's no way that we can root it out.
Yeah, via
the awareness.
Yeah.
Brother, 如果有时间的话, Brother 可以跟我们 go through 那一本书吗？那个。
可以啊。
因为我觉得那本对我们现这个对我的 stage 现在我是觉得那一本很重要。
Yeah，可以。So knowing and seeing is also very important. 那一段很重要。
那一段因为那在里面你有 mention 到 Salika Sutta 然后。
Yeah, it's linked. That one also have the avoidance and all those things. It's linked, it's all connected. Because it comes from that sutta. It's like effacement. Effacement only happen in the one who see and knows. It's seeing and awakening. The direct seeing and the direct awakening. Yeah. It doesn't happen. Effacement doesn't happen in one who doesn't see and doesn't know. So that one is the same. Because the other Salika Sutta effacement is about the direct knowledge and vision of the reality. So it's the same. Means you can have the direct knowledge and vision of the reality that you can see through the direct seeing. Then when you can see, you can awaken. That's why it can only happen in one who see and one who knows, not in a cultivator who doesn't see and doesn't understand or doesn't know. So the freedom of mind, liberation of mind, come from realization, wisdom, not through fantastic mind state of meditation or psychic ability and all those things. So this is what the Buddha meant, the direct seeing and the silent mind awakening to truth. Mm. Very good, Sadhu. We will go through that book. Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Matthew.
Sadhu.
Thank you, Matthew.
Okay.